broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. This is Matt Sorensen, joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Kohler. We are two tax lawyers, business owners, dreamers, lovers. Not together, just separately. We're business partners. Let me just be clear on that.
I want to just
get into that one.
Yeah. And thank you. Not that there's a problem with that. Everybody teased their own. But, before the show started, I said, Matt, bring us in with a lot of energy. I appreciate the comment. Amazing partner. But let's bring it up a little. Woo! Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're so excited today. So that's what I was shooting for.
Well, this was a protest, really, to our sponsor, Rockstar, who has failed to send me my free Rockstars. So consider that a protest. So
okay. So we're going to make the consumer, the listener, suffer because Rockstar did not send us a case this month.
What I should do next week, I'm just going to have a Monster, and I'm just going to give Monster all the credit. And we'll see if Rockstar gets a little jealous.
We'll see. I've got a connection. I got a new connection to Rockstar, Matt. I need to tell you about it. So okay. I've got to actually make a call on that. I got an idea. All right. Anyway,
okay. All right.
Matt and I and our little pet projects that are ridiculous. Welcome everybody. If you saw the title of the show, this is a controversial one because I'm going to say it right now. I know this is going to make some of you want to careen off to the side of the road and it's heresy, but guess what? Dave Ramsey is not right all the time. There, I said it. I mean, we probably lost some viewership right there. I mean,
yeah.
I swear, that guy.
He's still there.
Yeah, I know. Anyone? That guy has so much credibility. Everybody's like, if Dave Ramsey said it, it must be true. I don't know what he did, but.
Yeah. Hey, he's done some good stuff. So that's what you did. Yes. He earned that credibility, but we're gonna give our little spin on it. And I think go a little deeper than where, I think Dave Ramsey just leaves it a little simple, which can be good for many people. Some things are a little more complex. Complex problems require complex answers. And now that we're going to get complex, we just want to break some of it down better. At least I do.
Yeah. And I want to say too, I think Dave Ramsey is amazing. We've had his daughter Rachel on the show before. He has changed my life, changed the lives of many, many people in the way we look at debt, which I've got to hand it to him. But again, extremes can be a lot. And we'll give some examples here. In fact, I'll say one right now, just to kind of wet your whistle before we do our tax and legal tip, is I've got a good friend that literally said, I'm not even putting money in my 401k. I'm doing nothing until I'm out of debt. And I was like, really? Okay. And I don't know, you know, he's not even going to get the match at work. He's going to step away from 100% match because the debt is, he's been told that debt has got to go and there needs to be a behavioral change. Now, we'll talk more about that in detail. He could be right or wrong. We'll talk about why more in detail, but.
Yeah, I get it. There's good arguments both ways, but we're going to get into a lot of it from student loan debt, how much to take, when to take debt in your business, debt on a rental property or investment assets, obviously your home, and each one needs its own little separate analysis on
car,
what's good or bad.
Car, and then credit cards in general. Mm-hmm. I constantly am talking with college students that are like, yeah, my parents said I should never get a credit card. Really? Okay, good luck getting that first home loan, because is it okay?
Yeah.
Your parents said it's okay to buy a home, right? Yes.
The bank ain't giving you.
Yeah, good luck, you know? So
they're going to pull a credit report and see a blank zero on it.
That's exactly right. So we're going to talk about that and how to manage the credit card situation. I've got some great suggestions there. So,
all right, cool.
Okay.
Well, before we get into the main event, so to speak, let's hit our tax and legal tips. And I think I'm going to go first with the legal tip, if you'll indulge me.
Oh, really? You're going to, okay. You're just going to commandeer the ship here.
I'm a co-host.
You've earned the right. You've paid enough dues being on the show with me for sure. Okay. It's all yours, man.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, I want to talk about intellectual property a little bit. And the reason I want to bring this up is because of the Kawhi Leonard Nike trademark intellectual property dispute that's been going on. If you followed the news at all, Kawhi Leonard, of course, the NBA player of the year last year, I believe, player on the Toronto Raptors that got traded to the Clippers. If you don't follow basketball, let me just say he's kind of a big deal in the world of basketball. If you follow it, you know what we're talking about. Well, he designed a little logo-ish type thing for himself for products with Nike. And there's this big dispute going on now about whether he really designed it, whether Nike designed it, whether it's his little logo, whether it's Nike's logo. Can Nike use it? Can he use it? It's a big mess, right? And of course, I believe he's now with another company and not Nike anymore, repping another brand. So
that's going to help a lot.
Yeah, so it's a big mess. And I thought it was a good time to just talk about protecting your intellectual property and when to go out and make that trademark filing for yourself.
And Okay? Can I add, Matt, before you give some tips? I just told Matt before the show, when he said he wanted to talk about trademarks, I had a call with a client yesterday back east. And really bright guy, corporate, but he's wanting to build some small business ventures on the side. And he is developing a food product. And I'll just leave it at that. We try to keep everything very, very confidential with our clients. But it's a food product, and he's gotten a great response from local community, and he's going to go through the steps to start getting it approved to package and sell in a variety of ways.
Yeah.
And he said, we need to set up my entity. I go, all right, cool. Totally agree. Let's get your entity going. There's some liability exposure. Definitely, if you make some money, we've got some tax planning to do. And he said, and I said, have you thought of trademark? And he goes, well, I'm going to register my LLC with the state. I'm good. I mean, no one can take my name once I register my LLC. And I go, not too fast. Let's just talk about you going outside the borders of your state, which is going to happen really quick with a food product and a website, right? Mm-hmm. So, Matt, with that context too, we can't relate to Nike and playing NBA sometimes, but it's an interesting story to see that battle going on. But then in our own lives too, we've got to say, well, when do I trademark something? So
yeah, exactly.
There you go.
I'm going to hit this on another level, but on the back to Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, sorry. Did I totally throw you off?
You gave me a great idea. I'm going to add a tip to my tip now.
Okay. So, okay, good. All right. Just didn't want to derail the train.
No, you just made me think of something smart. I think we'll see. Okay. The question is, what is a trademark? It's not just a name. Like, it could be the name of a product, right? The Big Mac, right? McDonald's. But it's the product is the Big Mac, or the arches of McDonald's. Well, that's not in the name McDonald's. That sign and symbol, it could be trademarked. Okay, so if there's things in your business that you use for people to recognize you, whether it's the name of a product, those are things you definitely want to trademark and protect that name. One thing that I started doing was in my videos. This is 6 or 7 years ago when I first started just doing my videos. I was trying to figure out, how do I sign off on my videos on self-directed IRAs? And so I started using this little slogan, take control of your retirement. And that was my thing at the end of every video I did. It was take control of your retirement, and it was on my channel and everything. Well, then I realized a lot of other people started using it in my industry on their stuff. And I'm like, hey, that's not cool. I came up with that. I've got all the old videos on YouTube to prove it too. So I went out and eventually got a trademark for it, because I wanted to protect that. That was a slogan that I like to use in my business to describe services I provide. And then I want to go out and claim. So I now have the trademark for take control of your retirement. Those listening of my competitors, watch out. I got it.
Wow. Can I use it? If I say
it. Directed IRA owns it now. So you can use it. All right. As, co-founder.
Yeah, I didn't want a nasty letter from Matt Sorensen.
Yeah, yeah. You won't get a cease and desist. Don't. Okay.
All right. So in your personal life, you did that to lock down that slogan. So it could be an image, a slogan, a name, but it's not a process. That's a patent.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, or the product itself, like the components in something, or how you design something, right? the actual product itself could be a patent, depending on what you're doing.
Okay.
So
what's the moral of
the story? Think of those things. Yeah, just think of those things in your business, the different things. It's not just the name. It could be slogans, images, Kawhi Leonard logo of a hand, which is where the dispute arose of some drawing that he did of his own hand. And I guess he's got big hands. I don't know. It's what the lawsuit's about. So just think of those other things in your business that might be valuable to trademark if it's really specific to your marketing and how you want to brand yourself.
Can I piggyback your tip as well?
Yes.
So back to this gentleman that I was talking to yesterday. The timing of all this is a little tricky because, you know, when you're developing a product, there's always costs and you're trying to manage things. And our cost to do a trademark for a client is $750 plus the filing fee. Now, you might want to lock down that name in different genres or industries or categories, for lack of a better word. But it's not too bad. I mean, for under $1,000, you can really kind of get rolling. Mm-hmm. But he was like, $1,000, you know, it's like this and that. And he's trying to develop food and he's got packaging and labels and all these 100 things going on. So another $1,000 is a big deal. And I said, well, here's what I'd recommend. Let's get your entity going. He totally agreed. Let's get some sales going. Package a few of these things. Let's sell them around town. Let's do a little bit of shipping. See if the horizon's looking bright still 6 mm-hmm. months from now or 4 months from now. During the holidays, you might be a really hot time to kind of see how this goes. There could be some gift baskets and some mailings that go with that. But let's see if you start making money. And if it starts to look even better, like you're in phase 2 and it's starting to rock, immediately pull the trigger. Don't wait. Because you could be down this path a year or say 18 months from now and go, okay, I'm ready to trademark. And we find out right away that someone else is going to have a problem with the way you want to trademark it. So you don't want to wait too long. But you don't want to run out right out of the gate and do it either. So there is an art to this. So I told him to stay in touch.
Yeah. And I think it's too, like, how much are you investing in your product? If you're creating a product that has $100,000 investment, then trademark the name. But if your investment is maybe $5,000 or something of what you're putting in to develop or get this product tested, the trademark is not necessary immediately. And I agree. Do that as you go. I will say one thing, though. Is one of the things people forget about, because then they get going, right? If that product is successful, now you're figuring out how to sell it and get the inventory in, and like you got a million problems now, right? Good problems, but forgetting that trademark can sometimes happen. So just keep it at the front of your mind.
Yeah. And we've had clients that have gotten a cease and desist letter and they thought, well, I thought my name was okay. Well, it is in Minnesota, maybe, but you're starting to cruise around the country. We've got issues. All right. Well, very good tip, Matt. I thought that was excellent. You worked in a little NBA as well. So
good stuff. Yeah. Season starting.
Yeah. This is that weird time of year where every sport is in like process. We got baseball wrapping up. We got basketball starting. We're in the middle of football season. I'm like, it's like sports overload.
Yeah.
Well, some of you love it.
It's glorious. Okay. It's
great. All right. Let's hit the tax tip. Woo.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, here's my tax tip, which I think is timely as well with this season of joy. We've got Halloween in the next few weeks.
Horror, okay.
Yeah, horror. That's a season of joy and horror. Halloween's a big deal in our family. We love it. We've got Thanksgiving and Christmas. So here's what I want to plant the seed and encourage all of you to start thinking about, and that is your travel deductions. Some of you may be booking some airfare soon, planning some trips around Christmas instead of presents under the tree, becoming more and more common. So here's the tip. Try to incorporate some sort of business purpose with your upcoming travels this fall. And you're going to see articles of mine and other newsletter tips that we're going to give on this point, because it really is a big one. Thanksgiving dinner is an excellent, excellent time. No kidding. We've done it in our family many times. Thanksgiving's a great time to sit around when you're eating pie and everybody's a little, you know, intoxicated on food and they're like, ugh, and talk about the business. Have your board meeting. This could be a board of advisors in an LLC or sole proprietorship even. It could be the board of directors of your corporation. Get your family involved. Talk about your strategic plan for 2020. Write up what your goals are for next year. I've got a calendar coming out that's going to help you do that. I think we have a calendar. Sorry. We got this calendar thing that I think is going to help out a ton. We really want you to be thinking about your plans for next year and sharing them. When you share them, they come alive. So there's so many benefits to this, because when you get together for a business purpose, now I can write off your travel to get there, probably 50% of the food. And for one meeting, we might have a couple days worth of write-off and some travel. Now, if you're going to spend 5 or 10 days somewhere, we need to have some business activity every day, which is typically 4 hours, a critical meeting, a conference, or some things like that. Now, many of you can read up on that further. I've got little videos on it. My tax and legal library, I have a very lengthy video on that, goes through the details. You could do a consult with your accountant, one of the accountants or attorneys at our office, to flesh out the details. But the point is, have it in the back of your mind. I want you to make sure that your business pays for any airfare this fall. And you want to let your business do it. And that's why I'm bringing it up now. I don't want to wait till the week before Thanksgiving. You're like, Mark, I already paid for my hotels.com, or I already paid for my airfare. No, no, no. Let your business pay it now. And let's get a business purpose integrated into those trips.
So, love it. That's my tip. Yeah. I mean, one more reason to mix business and pleasure together, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Matt and I, yeah, totally. And respectably. And Matt and I both have kids in college, and they both work in our businesses. And so when they travel back for the holidays, I'll have the business pay for their travel if there's some involved, because I want to make sure that they're back. We're talking about their role and duty in the business, what they're doing. And it's a great opportunity to build relationships. Sometimes you sit around with your kids or your family, like, what do we talk about? Okay, nothing. Well, hey, how's your business going? Tonight, I'm trying to schedule an evening meeting with my daughter, her first cousin, and some of the aunts. And we're working on Molly's business for the fall. And deal. I mean, it's going to rock. It's such a big deal. And Matt, I can't wait to share it with you. We may even have Molly come on the show.
Okay.
But I want to make sure we're turning the corner. I got her board. This is funny. Her board of advisors are all of her aunts. So it's my wife and all of her sisters and grandma are going to be around our conference room table tonight, where Molly and Ella, the first cousins, are going to pitch their idea. Now, they're not looking for money. They're looking for advice. And you're going to hear about this motherly aunt advice down the road. So, but that's what's going on at the Kohler House. We're crazy. I'm all into it. I just love it. I'm a geek when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, talking the talk and walking the walk. So,
boom.
Love it. Well, that's a good tip. Timely. I'm just saying that. I'm like, ooh, good reminder on my kids coming home for the holidays, because we are booking that travel right now. All right. Well, let's get into the main event. This is, I think it's going to be somewhat controversial, but I think we have pretty dang good arguments.
Yes.
And I'm curious to see how close Mark and I are. We might disagree here ourselves. We'll see.
Yeah.
We've talked through the basics here. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, let's start out. Do you want to start out on just like good debt, bad debt?
Yeah. And I think we already called out the Ramsey concept, but I want to summarize it. And in fact, with some of the
examples. Yeah, start with that. Like, some people have never heard Dave Ramsey. What does he say on debt? Like, what's his?
Yeah, very true. And I shouldn't assume all of you do that. I listen to his podcast on occasion. He's got some great YouTube videos. And I would encourage all of you to take a little dose of Ramsey here and there. I've made my kids watch some of the videos on saving. He's got some great videos. I think he has done a phenomenal job. Okay, now here's two concerns of Ramsey. Let's just get them on the table, and then we're going to start to talk, and then we'll bring it back full circle at the end of the show. Two controversial points that I don't like that Dave says. All debt is bad. He'll say that. I mean, you can barely talk him into letting you get a home loan. And if you want to buy a rental property, he says, save your money and buy it with cash. If you have any debt whatsoever, you are supposed to have a behavioral change, hyper-focus on that, and pay off that debt before you do anything else. And I, again, this close friend of mine literally is backed away from any sort of savings, sold their car, bought a cheaper car, which I'm not opposed to. You know, many of us drive cars that we really are a little extravagant for what we really need. Car industry has a different opinion of that. I get so sick of car commercials. It's like ridiculous. But the first controversial point is all debt bad? And we're going to bring up our counter argument to that. The second thing that Dave Ramsey says is all credit cards are bad, period. There's no discussion point whatsoever. Cut them up. You don't need them. Yeah. He'll go off on the FICO score procedure. He'll go off on credit card companies. And I do agree. Credit card companies have their best interest in mind. The interest rates are off the chart. It can take you years under minimum payment guidelines to get out of credit card debt. Mm-hmm. It is disgusting. And we should not be in credit card debt. But does that mean that all credit cards are bad? And one last analogy there, just think of dynamite. I just built a house this last year and we had to dynamite to get some of the rock out of the lot so we could build on it. A house built upon a rock. That's what we were trying, you know, little smart analogy there.
Yeah.
But we had to use some dynamite. And man, it was quite the big deal to get a company that was licensed to do that, to come travel several hundred miles to come, plant the charges and blow it up. I got it on video, man. It's so cool. It's just, you know, it's anyway, but and it was spendy. It was the most expensive fireworks show I've ever had.
Yeah.
And it lasted about 2.1 seconds. But
yeah.
Anyway, but is dynamite bad? Well, in the wrong hands, it is. It can be extremely dangerous and it can kill people. It can destroy lives. It can be very, very damaging. But in the right hands, it can serve a very useful purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it did for us building our house. It was cheaper to use dynamite mm-hmm. than to go pay an excavator and 10 guys with jackhammers for 3 weeks out there per hour,
passing
this rock away by hand. So anyway, I just want to use that analogy again because I want all of you to have an open mind during the show against those two Ramsey comments. So, Matt, so good debt, bad debt. Let's go there. Can I throw that baton to you? What do you think about good debt versus bad debt? Is there a list in your mind?
Yeah. Well, Mark and I might talk about this a little differently. So just fair warning there. But I like these five categories of debt when I start thinking about debt, what's good, what's bad. And in general, I think a lot of people can easily say, well, consumer debt is the first one, is always bad, right? Don't get consumer debt to buy just consumer goods, to buy, you know,
furniture,
stereos or TVs or fancy stuff, right? Like lifestyle stuff or to go out or trips. Like that's consumer debt you're putting typically on a credit card or maybe even a line of credit.
Store financing, stuff like that. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's be category one. That one's always on the bad. Okay. That's in fact, if we're going good, bad, and ugly, that's the ugly. Let me just write off the flex four.
Yeah. You
home, student, business debt, and investment debt for like rental real estate.
Okay. I want you to give that list again. I may have talked over that. So list the five categories in your opinion.
We've got consumer debt, home debt for your residence, student debt, business debt for starting or growing a business, obviously, and then real estate investment debt. You know, a loan you're getting to buy or improve an investment asset, whether it's a rental or a flip. Okay. So five different categories. Now, in those other four, I think you can have good debt and bad debt. It depends. It's not so, you know, black and white. So you got to analyze many different things in there to determine good debt and bad debt. And now let's just take the home. That's probably the easiest one, I think.
Let's tackle that one first.
Okay. You have to live somewhere. Okay. Let me just say that. Obviously, duh. Thanks, Matt. Genius. Well, what's the cost of rent? Let me just take Phoenix where I live. In a good neighborhood, a 4-bedroom, 3-bath house, okay, nothing too fancy, is going to cost you $2,500 to $3,000 a month in rent. A mortgage for that house is maybe going to be $2,000 to $2,500. So the cost of my monthly cost of living is actually cheaper by owning than renting.
Okay.
So there's a cost component there of just what do I have to outlay each month to just live and have a home.
Okay, a couple of thoughts. Randy Lupke and I covered this in the book, Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom, because I was pretty adamant that everybody should make a goal to buy their first home as soon as possible. You're going to build wealth with that. And Randy had a great counter argument. He's like, there's a lot of urban areas in this country where it is cheaper to rent than to buy.
Correct. Yep.
And his daughter was living in parts around in and around LA. I know there's a number of clients of ours that are in and around San Francisco. Seattle, you just name a city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bellevue up by Seattle. I mean, forget it. You could rent a lot cheaper than buying a home.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to put down this huge down payment that's just going to sit there like an egg, earning no interest, and you're just hoping for appreciation down the road. So that I like, Matt, what you said. You could be using debt wisely to get into a home to reduce your cost of living monthly But right. on the flip side, it could be bad. And mm-hmm. and I want to add this. Not only could you maybe rent cheaper, how many people overbuy, right? You want mm-hmm. this dream home. It's really not that time in your life yet. You overbuy. And then have you ever heard the concept house rich, cash poor? Because you overbought yeah. a home. Now you're trying to get by every month because you got this huge house payment you shouldn't have got into. And don't, you know, adjustable rate mortgages and the crisis of 2007 starts to remind us of some issues, and we got to be careful. Mm-hmm. So buying a home can be good, but look at your location, compare it to rent, and don't overbuy.
Yeah, for sure. And also look at 15-year mortgage versus 30. Just run the amortization schedules and see how much money you save for a little more payment by doing a 15-year mortgage as opposed to a 30. So I think, you know, even within the home there, and obviously a lot of people have stayed in a home for many years, built up equity, paid down the loan, kept their monthly payment the exact same, even though rents could have gone up over 10 years. On the other hand, again, you could be in a really expensive place where you can't even buy a home. The entry-level home is $800,000 in the LA area or the Bay Area or in Seattle. Like, that's just, a lot of people don't even have a choice. They just can't even qualify for that mortgage. And even if they could, they'd be overpaying versus what they could rent. So,
Yep, I love it.
Okay, and there you go, the home. Yep. So, now, let me say this too, okay? There's other perks on that because some of this debt is tax deductible, right? Mm-hmm. The interest that I'm paying on that loan, if I'm itemizing, is tax deductible.
Yes.
So there's a little tax perk on that versus my rental payment. Nothing is, I'm not going to ever see anything benefit on taxes on my home for renting. Yep.
And so be careful. You can abuse that in the sake of it's okay to buy a home. You can justify more debt than you should maybe take on is another way to say this. So mm-hmm. just be cautious and don't overdo it. Now, I want to digress on this point too for the home issue. I think in most area of the company, most areas of the country, we could say that buying a home and in a person's lifetime, on average, definitely the majority of the time, it's a good thing to do because you're going to be able to deduct your interest, build equity, and that home becomes a nest egg or a piece of value in your life. So if that's one of our primary goals in our long-term investment strategy, we've got to have credit in order to do it. Now, I joked a moment ago, but let's digress there now for a minute. If we could, Matt, is that okay on this topic? Because I think this is where this plays in. Credit cards. Now, Matt's first category was consumer debt, which one might argue is a credit card. And we don't want to use credit cards for emergencies. We should have an emergency fund. We should have some 2 to 3 months of our cost of living in an account to handle those good and bad things that happen in our lives where we need cash quickly. But are all credit cards bad? And I feel very, very strongly that they're not. They're a tool. And just like dynamite, they can be abused or they can be used usefully. So what I did with all my kids when they turned 16 is we got them a credit card in their name, not adding them as a signer on mine or me co-signing theirs. They just got them a credit card, even if it was $200. And we would start using it for a small purchase every 2 or 3 months and put it back in the drawer. Use it every 2 to 3 months, pay it right off, put it back in the drawer. Mm-hmm. They quickly built up credit. And their credit scores are all over 700, my kids that are over age 20. And they learned that we don't use that credit card for fun or consumer goods or emergencies. That credit card is a tool because my oldest, my son Dylan, went out to buy a home a year and a half ago. And when he walked into the bank, he had stellar credit. And his friends, who had barely even filed a tax return in college, they had no idea of this. They said, "How'd you get credit?" And he was, this is where it comes back, where kids ultimately someday will say, "My dad's pretty cool." But
yeah,
it took a long time for us to get to that point. But anyway, so he was like, "Let me tell you." And so,
listen to my dad.
Yeah. So just don't villainize credit cards if you use them properly, because you're going to want to buy a house and you've got to show that you have self-control and restraint. And that's what that credit card in the drawer does.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to show some discipline. That's the thing with the credit cards. You have to show discipline. Only use it when you know you can pay it back off. Don't use it to, you know, even as it's at the grocery store, buying groceries and stuff, unless you know you have that money available to pay right back off.
Yeah. Now, before we go to the next category, Matt, one other thing, I've just got to say, sorry. If you saw the video, Matt rolled his eyes, you know, back off. I saw that.
That was just a,
I know there's another counter argument out there. Mark, okay. What about points? Because I love the points guy. I follow the points guy. Matt and I love to build up points. And
I'm not rolling my eyes here. That's a great point.
Okay, so you're back on track. You retract the eye roll.
I'll yield the balance of my time to the gentleman from Idaho.
So here's the thing. A lot of people, it sounds sexy, and they get caught up in this, I want to build points, and I get this new credit card to get all these points. I've got to spend $5,000 in the first 3 months. Da, 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 da. And with the good intention of building points, which are tax-free to redeem, I get it. They will, again, lose control of the credit card management system.
Yeah.
Now, we use credit cards in our business. I use credit cards on occasion to build points, but I immediately pay them off at the end of the month. And so you've got to be careful, people, that if you go down this path of, I want to build points, and I admire that. I've got articles on it, videos on it. I love it. But as an entrepreneur, that credit card can easily become a crutch. It's easily to get addicted, you know, just like the back pain. It's easy to take a Norco, get rid of that back pain. And then the next day when you feel kind of good, you got to stay away. Mm-hmm. You know, anyway, it's another example.
Yeah. Yeah. Points. I mean, the reason that credit card industry offers that and gives you those perks or even cash back is because they know in the end, most people don't have the discipline they're going to win.
Gonna get you. That's right.
Yeah. They know the numbers. So you have to be smart enough and disciplined enough to win on that. And that's what it's a discipline thing. Yeah. So.
And that's why when you're sitting at the roulette table and they're bringing by the drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, they just want to keep you there. Bar waitress comes by, brings you drinks. You're sitting there. This is so I've heard.
Yeah.
And
they'll bring you, you know, a root beer if you want. They'll bring whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hit, you want to go to student debt?
Sure.
Discuss student debt. Yes. Okay. I'll give my little quick tip on student debt. I had student debt. I had six-figure student loan debt by the time I got out of undergrad and law school. And I remember President Obama, when he was president of the United States, had student loan debt and paid off his student loans as president of the United States.
Oh, right? My gosh.
We've heard that student loan debt is the next debt crisis. It's not a mortgage crisis. The next looming debt crisis is the student loan debt. Now, student loan debt can be okay. Again, do you have discipline and how much are you getting? We had a guest on back talking about saving for college a month or two ago on the podcast that had a really great tip on how much student loan to get. And it's pretty straightforward. And I think, and as I've talked to my own kids and I thought about it more and more, I'm like, God, this is right on. His tip was the amount of student loan debt you should obtain should not exceed the first year salary of the job you're planning to get out of college. Okay. So let me say it again. What's your first year salary when you finish the education? If the debt you're getting does not exceed that, you've gotten too much. If the debt you've received has exceeded that, you've received too much debt.
Yep.
So keep that in mind. If you're getting 50 grand of student debt, you better be getting a job that starts you at 50 grand. If you've got $100,000 of student debt, you better be able to get a job that pays you 100 grand a year.
Yeah. And that's a rule of thumb, that a great place to start. And what's funny is, Matt, when you said that, this is where the logic process of the LSAT and the bar exam, you start to think logically. That's what they teach you in law schools, to think a certain way and to write a certain way. They don't teach you the law. You got to figure that out once you get out. But as you were saying that, my mind was going, what is Matt presuming in that statement? That you know what your career is going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am astonished by this. I talked to a lot of college students about student debt and I go, what's your first year salary going to be? Well, I don't know what I'm still figuring that out. I'm like, hold it. You're getting in student debt now simply for the experience to go to college. Now, I get it. As a freshman, you may not know exactly what you're going to do when you graduate. I get
right.
it. But for crying out loud, you better at least know the industry, or generally, are you going into medicine, law, accounting, teaching, whatever. But I talk to students all the time that, what was the one the other day? It was some sort of, I don't know. I was like, where would you even get a degree in that? What would you do with that? And I was like, and they had no good answer for me. So I don't want, in fact, maybe it's better I don't use an example, because someone listening is like, I got that degree and I just did fine. Well, but you know.
And that's okay. Did you get student loan debt for that? Right. So like, let's say you want a degree in the humanities, but you know what a humanities job, if you could find one, yeah, is going to pay you maybe 30 grand a year to start. Okay. Well, did you go get a degree from a private school that cost you 75 grand? That was not a good investment for an education in humanities. Now, if you can chalk it up and say, well, that was a luxury, like those 4 years, that was luxury that I got to learn about the humanities. And so, but could you pay for that? It's almost like you buying other goods, right? Yeah. Just because it's education. I think a lot of people have just said, well, it's for education, period. I can justify it because I'm furthering my education. Well, yeah. Okay. You got to have a means to an end with that, I think, in terms of your salary you're going to get at the end of the day as you obtain that education.
Yeah. And I think that is just so poignant because if you were blessed enough to grow up in a family where there's wherewithal to pay for that $75,000 private school, then feel blessed and learn everything you can and soak up every minute.
Yeah.
But if you grew up in a family where they can't help you pay for it and you're going to go into a significant debt for an art degree, not that art's bad by any means, it's wonderful. Yeah. But
maybe you can take a few art classes, but that ain't going to be your major.
Yeah. Oh, great point. And Matt, how many students I talk to that I go, what are you passionate about? Well, that's why I want to go to school. I want to do this art degree. Let's just use that as an example, which I've heard many a time. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, make that your side hobby. Make that your side business. What's going to pay the bills? Well, I want to love my job. Well, so do I, you know, but
yeah,
got to pay the bills, you know, and, you know, yeah, working 12 hours a day as a tax lawyer, I love this, but it's work, you know, and
right,
my hobby is something completely different. So your hobby better make money legit, yeah, and have a path towards that or make it a hobby. Mm-hmm. So,
anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let me say this on tax. I just want to hit a couple of tax points on each of these. Student loan debt can be deductible, but not if you're high income. So you phase out. So you can deduct your student loan interest up to $2,500 a year. This is per tax return, even if you're married or single. It's $2,500 max of student loan interest you're paying on your student loans. But you phase out on that 85 grand single. You don't get any more deduction. And 170 grand married. No student loan interest deduction. So just keep in mind as you get higher income, that ability to write off that student loan interest totally goes away.
Okay. I love it. Okay, now on this good debt, bad debt concept, I like the combination of this almost in a grid format. Because I came to the show thinking good debt and bad debt, kind of linear, left side, right side. Matt said, well, I've got five categories. And the nice thing about that is we mm-hmm. both combined this concept, these two concepts to say every debt could be good or bad. And so it's almost like these categories of debt, and I'm sure we could get into more of them, could be abused or profitable. So I really like where we're headed with this. So we got a couple more categories.
Yeah.
So let's keep moving. So what's your next one on your list?
Okay. Next one, we got business debt.
Okay.
So this would be debt you would obtain to start a new business, maybe to grow or expand an existing business. And
product
so
line,
what's that?
A credit line, right? Or expansion.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, okay. Who talked most recently? Good. You want to go first? You go first. When does it make sense? I'll ask you, when is it okay to go into business debt in your opinion?
Well, good question. See, this is very tricky question.
Yeah, I stumped you. Did you hear that, people? That's serious.
There's so many, it depends in this category.
A lot of variables.
What I would say is if let's say you have an expertise in something, and for certain businesses, it's more cut and dry. Let's say you're a professional, you're a dentist, even a lawyer or some other type of professional where you've got a degree and a credential, you know how to do the work. There's definitely demand for those services.
And you got to set up an office.
Yeah. You got to set up an office and you might need furniture, equipment, you know, things like that. Though that type of debt makes sense. Very low default rates on that. Those businesses generally have much more success, and taking on a reasonable amount of debt makes sense. But you obviously need to budget it, and you're going to work with a bank generally who's going to make you do that to determine that you can pay it back. On the other hand, a new business venture for a new product for something that's never been tested, or even for a speculative real estate deal when you've never done one before, you need to be very careful about taking on debt in those situations. And maybe you need to prove yourself a little bit first before getting debt, kind of this test the waters type thing where you're bootstrapping it with some cash of your own or some savings before you go out and get debt. I will say this, business debt in terms of the cost. See, home mortgage debt right now is very cheap. Student loan debt is pretty cheap in terms of what interest you pay to the bank. So those aren't as damaging if you mess it up. You still got to pay the money back, but the interest isn't crushing. Consumer debt interest is crushing. You know, you got consumer debt of 10 grand, but that interest alone can just crush you. Business debt is kind of in the middle. It's not going to be as good as a home mortgage. It's not going to be as good as a student loan debt interest rate. It's going to kind of be in the middle. It's going to be a little higher. So it's got a little higher cost. So it can be a little more crushing, of course.
I like that. I got a couple of thoughts. The first one is I'm going to put a word to what Matt was saying there, and I'm going to say stages. So many people say it's all or nothing. I've got to quit my job and start my business. And I shouldn't say a lot of people, but we see it more often than I'd like.
Yeah.
And it's not all or nothing. Going into this massive debt to come out of the gate strong, just test the market, test the product, get out. And so many success stories, you think about Apple and Microsoft and some of these fun and Facebook, they started in a garage. They started in an apartment. And yeah. They didn't expand until there was a major demand for their product. And that's okay. You know, sometimes we think I've got to come out and my store has just got to look as cute as Lululemon or I can't do it. And I'm like, what? Okay, that's point number one. Just take it slow. Make sure you can sustain the debt before you even just presume you can. Number two, I've got a couple good ones. I have seen many times, now this is really deep. I have seen a number of times, I'm not going to say many, a number of times in my career where I've got a client with a really successful business. And let's say retail. And I'm going to say this because it's public knowledge. It was 20 years ago and I thought these guys were great and they regretted the situation, but they had a business in this small town in Southern Utah that was a army surplus. They had this army surplus store and it had kind of a neat vibe to it. You know, you really felt like you were ghetto and you're in there buying army knives and there was things hanging from the ceiling and you'd buy camo. There was a line every time I was in there. They were selling guns. They were selling all sorts of cool stuff. It was small. It was cramped, but you felt like it was pretty cool. Like you were, it really resonated with a lot of people in that industry. They wanted to really, you wanted to feel like you were somewhere off the grid. So yeah. They were killing it. They were crushing it, if to use that word again. They were making a ton of money. I shouldn't say a ton, but they were successful. They were paying their bills, two small families, partners. But it wasn't good enough. They thought, we need to compete with REI. They would walk away, and they weren't proud of what they had. They wanted the Dick's Sporting Goods, the REI. We wanted to compete with that. And they always dreamed of having this store that was glitzy and pretty and all that. And I remember meeting with them going, guys, you're onto something good. How many people have this little corner bakery or corner restaurant with the line out the door, but they got to go big and they got to go get this huge location and go into debt. And they did to build this huge location to compete with and go toe to toe with Dick's Sporting Goods. They're not going to win. And they didn't. They failed. The thing closed down within a year. They couldn't go back to the other location. They lost the whole concept and idea. Mm-hmm. And their customers didn't like the new vibe, the whole nine yards. And you see this a lot of times, people that are sitting on a cool little restaurant, a cool little corner shop or bakery or something, but they feel like they've got to expand and they go into debt to do it. And they do it, go big, and then it's a huge gamble. Be careful.
Yeah, and I think one of the temptations is you get a little success, and now the banks will actually give you money. Now you have credit, and you're like, whoa, how much will you give me? You'll give me $1 million for another location? Are you kidding me? And when you otherwise wouldn't have spent your own money to grow that way. And sometimes the more natural growth where you bootstrap it more with your own cash and profits and things like that is a much better way to do it. Sometimes the money, you get drunk on it. You make a lot of decisions, do stuff glitzy, like you said, you wouldn't have otherwise done just because you had it and why not spend it? It's there. It's someone else's money, but you know, you got to pay it back tomorrow. So, yeah, that can be, again, it's the danger. It's the, you got to have the discipline to not take it on. Now I'll say on the tax, of course, of business debt, this is deductible against the business. So the interest you're paying on business debt is deductible. The other thing I was going to say is some businesses are in growth mode more, and your example of the Army Surplus one was on the what not to do side of it. But I think it's a good time for many business owners who kind of stall out in their business, who are like, they just hit their capacity, and maybe it's adding, you know, a few more employees. Maybe you're a small business owner with, you know, no employees or a couple employees. And some of, there's some of those things that really can be transformational where you can double, triple, you know, 5-10x your revenue by just taking on a little bit of measured debt as you go to just get you over the next hurdle to the next phase.
See, and that's a great example. That's the good and the bad, the yin and the yang of expansion. I gave an example of going too excessive in the process. And I like you that you use the word measured, where you grow based on the profits of the business and you're cautious and careful, a little bit of debt to expand with a targeted revenue stream that you can tie directly to that expansion. And profits just don't grow in trees. Revenue just doesn't fly in the door. And we wish it did, but we got to be really careful with that. So, okay, next category.
Okay, last one, real estate investment debt. Now, this one I think is a little, well, I shouldn't say it's so straightforward, but because it's not.
Yeah, you can overdo it too.
Yeah, so this is, of course, would be a mortgage or a loan you would get against real property you're purchasing. This could be purchase money mortgage, or this could be money you're using to improve the property. So in this category, this is, I think the easiest way to think is just with buy and hold rental properties, right? Okay. And you want to analyze the debt you're getting to the rent you're going to receive. And it's a simple cash flow analysis. There's calculators out on this. We've had prior podcasts on it. All you want to do is know, is the cash flow I can receive from the property going to service the debt, going to cover unexpected expenses, you know, going to have a little bit of money that I'm building up. Maybe you need a reserve for future improvements. You know, you run that little analysis, and then you can determine this is good debt. Of course, your expectation is the property is going to appreciate over time. I'm paying the mortgage down. Of course, the interest on the loan is deductible. You got some depreciation on the property. That stuff can help you on your tax returns. So rental property investment is a good thing. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is you could be buying properties that are upside down. And we've seen this in the individual real estate investor who maybe goes and buys a property from a place they don't know in a market they don't know. They get a mortgage because they got great credit. Frankly, the bank doesn't analyze the deal very well for them either. And they're upside down the day they bought the property. They overpaid. So you want to, but I think, and I'll just on rental property and debt, is always chase cash flow. If the real estate market goes down, who cares? Rents hardly ever go down. The price of the property, the value of it may go down, but you can hold out. You can make that back up. You can wait it out. If the cash flow is covering the mortgage and the rents you can obtain, and it's, you know, giving you a little reserve fund, putting some cash into your pocket, in the long run, you can wait out a down real estate market. So, but don't buy, you know, in a up and down market thinking you're going to be able to time it right if the property's already negative cash flow. That's very, very dangerous. And that's where you can end up getting bad debt when the market corrects and you're shelling money out of pocket on a property that's underwater.
Yeah. And I think this is where Ramsey has probably shifted my mindset on this a little bit. 5 to 10 years ago, I would probably been a little bit more on the bandwagon of no money down, try to use leverage as much as possible to get into a rental property. If the margins are a little thin, it'll work out and cash flow will happen. Even after the real estate crisis, cash flow is king. And if you've got cash flow, who cares what the debt to rate in equity ratio is. But I really think there is a little more wisdom in not going too far, Mr. Ramsey, of paying cash for rentals, because your ROI, return on investment, is goes through the floor. It's terrible. So, but maybe we could put down 20 to 30% rather than 5 to 10. We have a little bit more of a cushion so that your cash flow margin is a little stronger so that you can absorb no rent for a couple months. You could absorb a new fridge or some repairs if you needed to. Being so thin on margins with your cash flow just for the sake of getting into a rental isn't worth it. It's not. Yeah. And so that's where I think it can be abused too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But should we buy rentals? Yes. Should we use debt to do it? Yes. Absolutely. But cautionary.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Know what to buy. We've had a lot of good podcasts over the years on how to analyze a rental property. You can check in the podcast history, of course. So I think we've hit the good, the bad, the ugly, which I would call consumer here. Yeah. So any final thoughts you got on any of these? We hit all the five categories I had.
I'm going to throw out debt snowball.
Yeah.
This is a very common strategy. Ramsey didn't come up with it. It's been around for years, but he's very prolific at talking about it. We've got a little debt snowball video and spreadsheet that's free. You can just email me, Mark, at kkoslawyers.com. That's M-A-R-K at K-K-O-S, as in Sam, lawyers, L-A-W-Y-E-R-S.com. Several emails of mine that'll get to me. My assistant will grab it and send you back a debt snowball spreadsheet and video. Now, what the debt snowball is that I would argue to say all of us, any given moment, have a little bit of debt we'd like to get rid of. There's a credit card in the drawer. There's a little consumer debt at this store. This, maybe we just, it may not be out of control, but we've got a little bit of consumer debt. Let's get rid of it. The debt snowball is a process of focusing on the balances and the payments rather than the interest rate. And you try to get rid of your smallest balances first and then roll those payments you would have been making into the next one. And it's very common that people can get out of significant debt within 18 to 24 months when it could have been 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. They're really amazing. So let's get out of that debt that we shouldn't be using. Let's have some reserves and then let's use good debt. See what I'm saying? When you use a debt snowball, you're not cutting up credit cards. You're showing the FICO companies and algorithms that you do have self-discipline, that you took control of your life financially. So a debt snowball is not something to free you of credit cards. And Dave Ramsey says, cut them up. You know, and there's people that call them up all the time. I cut up my credit cards. I'm like, what? Maybe you need some good debt someday. And it's easy for Ramsey, who's estimated to be worth more than $50 million now, to say, I don't need debt. Well, surely you don't. But you know what? I do. I want to buy a rental property more. Mm-hmm. I can't pay cash like you. I'm not worth $50 million. And many of you are going to need debt. So don't overdo it. Don't cut up the cards. Pay them off. Get the debt snowball in place. And then sit back and wait. Let destiny and karma play a role in your life as you act responsibly financially. You'll be blessed. Mm-hmm. Things will happen. Good things mm-hmm. will happen.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good concept to finish on. I like that. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this topic on the good, the bad, the ugly on debt. And if you like the podcast, if you're still listening at this point, you like it. Okay. Give us 5 stars on whatever you're listening to. Include a comment that Matt is better than Mark. That always helps as well.
I'll take the 5-star, even if you say that. Yes.
Yeah. Matt is a little better than Mark. They're both good, but you know, I like Matt a little better. But seriously, I'm joking, of course. We really appreciate you listening, though, and sharing this with your friends. Of course, you can go to refreshyourwealth.com to sign up for our newsletter or learn more about us and the companies and services we provide. But thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.